This topic is very wide. This topic was chosen long ago, but I'm not actually going to talk about specifically about hydromagnetic driving on the jets themselves. I'd really be concentrating on disks, and I would be concentrating on protostellar systems. And I would like to make a few connecting points with what Mitch was telling us yesterday in his overview and in particular the issues of what does the angular momentum transport, and I would be saying a little bit about how jets can transport a large or maybe a huge fraction of the angular momentum in the jet, in the disks. Give you a little bit of history and recent observations, which is important for the community to be aware of. There are some very exciting recent results observationally in the protostellar community that have not sunk in, and I would like to emphasize them here. So I'll be a representative of the observers for a little bit. I would then tell you a little bit about models, taking advantage of what Mark has prepared the ground in terms of how to build protostellar disk jet systems. As an example of a disk jet system that self-consistent, what are the kinds of disks that would drive jets, and how those jets would affect the structure of the disk. This is a related problem. And I would also then talk a little bit about the origin of disk magnetic fields, again in the context of motivation by protostellar systems, where we know more, which is a good example. We have good observations, some better knowledge of microphysics, and as a model maybe for other systems as well. So in terms of the history, I would like to just read to you abstract of a few papers. Just read them. So 1982, Blanfield and Payne. The possibility is examined that angular momentum is removed magnetically from an accretion disk by field lines that leave the disk surface and is eventually carried off in a jet moving perpendicular to the disk. The mechanism is illustrated by a similar MHD solution. The next quote is my own paper, and I would not have dared be that presumptuous, but I've taken some flack over the years from the viscous disk types over that statement, so I'm feeling for historical justice I'm going to put it to. It is suggested that the strong correlation that appears to exist between the presence of circumstellar disks and the occurrence of energetic winds could be interpreted as a reflection of the fact the outflows regulate the angular momentum transport in the disk and hence are a necessary ingredient in the accretion process. This is saying that not just disks, jets can drive outflows, but that disks can drive jets, but that the fact that they drive jets is an essential ingredient in the accretion process, and therefore that is why you actually see jets so frequently with disks. And any further question would be for the question session. I'm not taking from their glory, I'm just trying to emphasize that point. So now the main point is the observations. So I'll focus on one recent paper, and there are a few more references down below. It's becoming more and more of a new paradigm among the star formation community, based mostly on recent Hubble observations. So I'm quoting again from the abstract of that paper, Wojtas et al. Using STIS on board the HST and MHD models for the launch of jets, we find that the mass ejected in the RW-Auriga outflow is accelerated from the disk within about half an AU from the star for the blue lobe, within 1.6 AU for the red lobe. Using also previous results, we estimate that the angular momentum transport rate of the jet can be a large fraction, two-thirds or more, of the estimated rate transported through the relevant portion of the disk. Finally, using the general disk wind theory, we derive the ratio B phi over B toroidal at about 80 to 100 AU above the disk. The toroidal component appears to be dominant, which is consistent with angular momentum transport by magnetic fields. And so here are a few other recent papers for DG Tau and two other papers. There's a whole class of objects, so-called FEO Yonis objects, which are presumably also low-mass young stars, which undergo strong episodic accretion and outflow correlated processes, where this has been suspected already in the past, that there's this very strong connection that the, and is known that the outflow comes from the disk. So here are some just showing you what those observations look like. You can look at the papers. They take the slits. They measure velocity gradients that are interpreted as rotation in different lines, and also have detailed models of the ionization structure in the disk from which, or in the jets, which are being resolved, from which the actual densities can be carefully modeled. So this Wojtas et al. Is, you see there's a whole bunch of slits, and you make the connection between where two regions in the disk, and you get different lines, and that's what's inferred on these scales, that there's a blue outflow from here, here is the red outflow, and these are the scales. So the point is that there's now evidence that those outflows that we see, which were not clear where they are, whether they originate from the star of the disk, there's more and more strong evidence that they actually come from the disk, and that they carry a substantial fraction of the angular momentum from that estimated from that region in the disk. And that is not just one source. They are seen wherever you look. That's now the trend that is being discovered. So I think it's very important for us to be aware of that. Well, that's again, that's m dot v, and they see the v's, and they get m dot from the various lines that they, emission lines that they measure. Sorry? No, the angular momentum, they see the rotation, they see gradients across the, which they interpret as v phi. So I would be happy to discuss it at the end of the session, because I only got 20 minutes, but I'll be happy to discuss it. So the way to model these kind of systems, I'm taking the extreme view here. Let's imagine that you have a rotationally supported Keplerian disk threaded by open magnetic field lines. The entire angular momentum will be removed. It doesn't have to be, but let's assume that the entire angular momentum is removed by large-scale fields that exert magnetic torques in the disk, take the angular momentum out, deposit it in the flow. And in a steady state, as we already heard, the radial advection as the mutual shearing of the disk magnetic field lines would be balanced by magnetic diffusivity. And since my colleague Mark already talked today, I thought it would be appropriate to present the work that I did with him some time ago, which is basically was early. We are now doing more sophisticated models, but this was the original kind of attempt to put it all together. Weakly ionized disks, and this was to make connection with what he was saying. We have done it in the ambipolar diffusion / Hall regime. And again, simple assumptions, geometrically thin, Keplerian, isothermal disk, even field symmetry, meaning that the field lines just thread the disk. And we have taken a radially localized region of the disk and matched it to Blanford and Payne type solution. I know you heard lecture here a few weeks ago, a little tutorial where this model was mentioned and claimed to be wrong because it wasn't taking account of the effect of the large-scale field at the surface of the disk. But there was apparently some confusion here because this model does do it through the connection with the wind. And some subsequent models, particularly has done the same thing by taking not just the localized region in the disk, but treating the disk also as part of the self-similar solution, disk and outflow, and got essentially the same results. And I'll show you simulations that also reproduce the basic effect. The picture is not from, this is a Ferreira work, which is also similar. He is not using detailed ampolar diffusion, but just parameterized ohmic diffusivity, but the basic idea is the same. So the solution is, this is kind of what the characteristic of the solution is. It all kind of hangs together. There's this quasi-hydrostatic layer above which the density drops down, the field becomes important, and eventually connects to the base of the wind. And in the, here is inflow, which turns into outflow. This inflow in steady state is balanced, this ram pressure, so to speak, of the ion neutrals flowing through the ions that are stationary here. There's a drag that is balanced by the tension of the field, and therefore the field curves in its direction to balance it. And this curvature is just exactly in the right direction, friction so that by the time it reaches the surface, it makes sufficiently large angle to eject a centrifugally driven wind. So it all actually hangs together in a logical way. And here is what the field and density look like. Br is bigger than V5 at the surface, and the velocities. We actually have a detailed model for the vertical structure evolution based on the fact that we have a model for the microphysics. So it's not just a quote-unquote alpha model. So to connect this to the wind, you can make a little parameter space here. So there's the wind parameters are the normalized angular momentum and mass to magnetic flux ratio, lambda and kappa. The disk parameters are the neutral ion coupling parameter, which tells you how well you're coupled to the ions, and the magnetic field strength, essentially the ratio of the Alfvén speed to the sound speed. And to get such wind driving disks, you need to have eta greater than one. You have to be sufficiently well coupled in that respect, and a less than one, which is the other parameter. And if eta is greater than one throughout, then you have strongly coupled disk. And I'll show you in a moment that you don't have to be eta greater than one throughout. So here's such a parameter space. So you pick up the coupling parameter eta, and this other parameter A grows along like this, from small values to large values, up to about one here. And we have two branches, as you see, because for a given, if you want to take more angular momentum, you can either increase the lever arm by bending the field, increase the lever arm of the Alfvén lever arm, which is like a larger lever arm that allows you to exert stronger back torque, or you can take more mass up. So there are those two possibilities which are reflected as two branches in the equilibrium curve. And that kind of immediately, let me digress for a minute to the issue of stability, because you wonder, so what is the, and this has been an issue, are these systems stable or not? And since, so you have an equilibrium curve which has turning points. I've just now replotted it as A versus lambda. It's the same plot for different eta's. And turning points usually mark change in stability properties. And I've done a little analysis because I've written it in this way because this is now like a magnetic diffusion equation. It's very analogous to like a heat equation. When you do interstellar medium heating and cooling curves, heating greater than cooling on one side, cooling greater than heating on the other side, and here you have advection or diffusion dominating on either side, and this is the equilibrium. And you could analyze this, which I did in a recent paper, and deduce which of these branches is stable and which is not. And the argument, and then I make some arguments why, first of all, real disks probably are stable, and the other argument is that some people previously identified and studied an instability in this, Lubov et al. And more recently Karen Sprut, and probably that is the unstable branch, and its nonlinear evolution may be related to the explosive type of events that Marina was telling us today. I also should mention this connection, just looking at the disk, the magnetic fields as such, if you have disks that take, the field is strong enough to take angular momentum, is therefore automatically stable to MRI, because it suppresses angular momentum, both because the field is relatively strong, so the Alfvén speed is relatively large compared to the sound speed, and also the magnetic field, as it bends, squeezes the disk, so the scale height becomes smaller. You can fit less of a wavelength in the actual height of the disk. So both of these combine to make those disks stable to MRI. But the field is not so strong that it actually triggers interchange. So it sits in a comfortable window. Here is the work by Rachel Sunron, Mark's former student who's now at Chicago, and I've superposed these. This is what Mark was showing you for the MRI for different field strength at 1 AU. This is now a beginning of models that we are doing. We are now doing the same work that I was telling you before about how to model those disk winds, but now with real tensorial conductivities, looking exactly what happens with height and how the models evolve. And you can see, so here is an example of such a wind-driving disk for 300 milligauss. By that time, the MRI is already basically dying off. So, but we will now be able to tell whether there are regions in the disk which perhaps are susceptible to MRI, and maybe some region of the disk can also carry angular momentum radially, although I don't know the answer to that yet. As I promised, there are simulations. We have seen Dr. Sakimoto showed us some simulations. There's this other one that he mentioned to, Kassen Kefens. And again, they get a steady state, which is very much like those solutions with the, here is the colloidal Alfvén surface. And the main point is that they calculate the angular momentum flux. And these are vectors that show angular momentum flux leaving the disk in the wind and balancing the angular momentum in the flow. So these are simulations, and therefore it must be right. So another point that I wanted to touch with, again, just first the issue of weakly coupled disks. As we just saw in those more realistic solutions, they don't necessarily have to be well coupled near the midplane. So Lee discussed it, and Mark Wardle in a great dusty kind of disk model also arrived at such solutions a few years ago. So here is the strongly coupled versus the weakly coupled. See, the strongly coupled, eta is greater than one everywhere, BR starts growing right away, and so does B phi. In the weakly coupled, nothing happens initially, then B phi starts growing, and later, when you really couple well, the BR would start to grow and bend and behave just like this. And the point that I want to emphasize here is that notice that, and this is a generic point, that the B phi grows before BR. Basically, kind of, it's the radial current, so it's the B phi dz. So there is a current, and B phi already grows early on, and the torque that is exerted on matter is B phi dz. And therefore, as Lee noticed in his parameterized solutions, you can take the same amount of angular momentum per unit decade in column density from each height, scale height of the disk, even though you are weakly coupled. Which means that you can have very low velocities, but it's not necessarily a so-called dead zone. It's not that you are not accreting anymore. It's just that you are accreting on a much longer time scale, which is the same time scale on which you can twist the field and therefore take the torque out. So I think it's important, especially also for the issue of planet formation in such systems. So final point was the origin of the disk magnetic field, again connecting with what Mitch was discussing yesterday, and I'm going to take, of course, not all systems are the same, but here is an extreme case which may actually be right. And we know that rotationally supported circumstellar disks, the most likely model is that they originate in collapse of self-gravitating rotating molecular cloud cores. Those cores are threaded by open magnetic field lines, interstellar field lines, which end up being dragged in, and we see it by polarization and Zeeman measurements observationally. And so Ruben Krasnopolsky was a student of Rogers, and I obtained a semi-analytic self-similar solution. Now, self-similar in R and T, not in R and Z as the Blanford and Fein. This is space-time solution. Describing such a collapse, incorporating both the diffusion mechanism and polar diffusion and magnetic braking, torsional Alfvén waves moving out of the disk to allow angular momentum to get out. And so I don't have time to discuss the details, but here is such a solution. The main point is that, so here's unpolar diffusion, the magnetic flux gets decoupled here, the rest of the matter streams in until it encounters a centrifugal barrier, shocks again a different kind of shock, and then creates a disk. And the amazing result is the asymptotic structure of the disk is that it has m dot constant, b scaling is out of the minus 5/4, which is miraculously the same as Blanford and Fein, but this is now just taking t equals constant and looking what it is as a function of r. And BR surface over BZ is 4/3, which means it's large enough to drive a wind. So this is my last transparency. Therefore, the asymptotic disk solution implies that surface magnetic field is inclined at 53 degrees, so it can drive a wind. And you could then incorporate, even though we didn't start with it, we assumed magnetic braking, but basically we could have started assuming that it's really a wind that's taking. So you can incorporate this wind solution directly into this collapse solution and show that really, because of the scaling that we find. And when interpreted in this fashion, we actually find out that these solutions that we get naturally from the collapse of molecular cloud cores correspond to this weakly coupled regime that, in the terminology that I was just telling you a minute ago, meaning that most of the disk volume is not well coupled and only the top is. So let me conclude. So the main point I wanted to drive here for us to really be aware of is that high resolution observations of protostellar jets have provided strong evidence that they originate in circumstellar accretion disks and dominate the angular momentum transport in the launching region. Now, I showed by means of semi-analytic and numerical models have verified that such diffusive accretion disks can reach steady and likely stable equilibrium state, in which as much as 100%, not necessarily, but possibly, most of the angular momentum is transported vertically through a magnetically driven outflow. Such magnetic field configurations, the other point is, are conducive to wind launching, that are conducive to wind launching and vertical angular momentum transport, not even by wind, maybe just by Alphen waves, originate naturally in the core collapse scenario of protostellar disk formation, which is the accepted picture of how protostellar disks form. But the point is that such vertical angular momentum transport probably plausibly occurs also in other astrophysical jet sources of the type that we've been discussing, although it's conceivable that that open magnetic field may have a different origin in non-protostellar systems. It doesn't necessarily have to be convected in, although it could. Maybe it's generated locally by some processes that open up field lines. Thank you.
Do you have any comment about the recent observation of the Young-Strahl object done by Manner and the Duchenne 2004 paper? And they claim that there is no correlation between the large-scale field in the molecular cloud and the jet direction. So
that's right. I don't think it's such a. There have been some other papers recently that argue that the launching itself may change the local conditions, can warp the disk, or it can act as a little rocket that pushes the disk. So there are some ways that people have started thinking about of just locally changing the environment that would let you think that this is the case. But I don't think it's an interesting issue, but I don't think it's a fundamental point.
Any other questions?
I think the M dot jet over M dot accretion is something like equal to the drift speed of the flow through the field divided by the accretion velocity. I wonder if that's borne out in your simulation, in your calculations.
I have not made such connections. No, it's not obvious to me. But
okay. Maybe we can.
Yeah, I mean, this 1/10 has come out from purely jet models without really doing the disk. So those results have been there just from the structure of the Blanchfield and Payne type solution.
But to load the field lines, one needs a certain diffusion velocity of material onto the field lines. And so that, yeah.
You mean the diffusion to prevent the disk from, the field from being advected inward?
Just to keep the material going up out along the field lines, one would need some steady diffusion of material onto the field lines, which is equal to the mass.
So the way we model it, and I mean, these are interesting issues how we do it. So we don't really model it as a diffusion. We have continuous disk wind mold solutions, meaning that the upward velocity component is already there from the midplane. It grows and crosses the sonic point where we determine, I mean, it's one of the constraints, crossing the critical sonic point. So it's not that we just allow the mass to somehow diffuse on. We have a consistent solution that does it. Yeah. If I'm allowed to use the blackboard as some. So if you just think of flow lines that come in, so here is, you can follow a given flow line as it comes in and turns, comes in and turns. So it's not like, so it's a continuous flow that ends up going into a wind. A small fraction of the mass ends up going up.
Anyone else? Or has he really cowed you all into silence?
They seem to be pretty cowed. Even Hank is quiet.
Since this is addressed to you, Ari, I'll ask two questions.
Please.
First of all, we don't know that the disks are stable, that these models are stable. Is that correct?
Well, I made some arguments that they have two branches, of which one seems. And so it was an indirect argument. It's a beginning. It's a very rich field. So the modest beginning that I made, I said, here's an equilibrium curve.
So this is a particular class of perturbations.
It's a general class. So I didn't even explore the perturbations. So although Hank can tell you the kinds of perturbations. They did axis symmetric perturbations, but found an unstable mode, which can fit physically into one of those branches that I have found, one of the equilibrium branches. But I've done something much simpler. I said, here is an equilibrium. It signals a change in stability. Let me find out which of these would be stable, as we do heating greater than cooling or cooling greater than heating. So it's just this diffusion argument. This equilibrium that I did was based on a Wardle, my solutions with Mark Wardle.
Exactly. So it seems that the self-similar model.
It's not self-similar in the disk. It's just the wind is self-similar.
Exactly. For that reason, you cannot claim anything about stability of things that are not, that do not satisfy that same kind of self-similarity.
I think basically you're right. It's a fairly limited statement. The thing is that, I mean, there are all those limits that are associated with doing self-similarity, but up to that, if they capture the basic physics, that's the best I can say.
Well, but they don't for perturbations that are not self-similar, so which will be the majority of all perturbations that are possible.
Well, the point is that it certainly is possible, yes. I mean, the point is well taken. When I go out of equilibrium, I'm saying that I would no longer be on this kind of equilibrium, and if there are other perturbations that can take me to other equilibria, they may probably enhance the stability rather than detract it. But I don't know.
Okay, and then maybe someone can correct me if I'm wrong, but I think that there are no global simulations which self-consistently show the launching of a wind, a Blanford and Payne type wind from the disk, and also integrate the internal structure of the disk over long periods of time, so you know you're not just looking at a transient.
So Dr. Matsumoto probably could say more about it, and I have just shown the Kasse and Kaplan's one, which they claim they start with something that is which is non-steady, but tends to steady state over a number of rotational periods, but I don't know exactly how much. And Daniel Poga has different.
Okay, fire away.
Daniel, can you keep this brief?
Yes. So, I was playing with the collapser model. So basically. I assume that you have a spherically, you have a wedge around the equator which is magnetized, and I allow it to collapse on the black hole. And the angular momentum was, specific angular momentum was so low that there was no circularization of the gas inside my computational domain. So what I got as a solution is that the accretion continued very close to the equator. And outside that accretion flow, there was inflow-outflow solution with the morphology looking very much like it's drawn on the blackboard. So it's a global simulation, and the solution was very much like Ari is showing. And it was quite stable. I ran it for hundreds of orbits at the inner radius, which corresponded actually to quite a few orbital timescales at large radii. Well, so my point is that I saw the very same solution when the centrifugally supported torus was formed. So I was trying to answer the question, do I require existence of that centrifugally supported structure to produce the jet, to produce an outflow? And the answer was no. You don't need a disk to form.
I think so. We are kind of at early stages, and probably more physics of the disk would be needed for those simulations. So definitely there's much to do.
Yeah. I really wish we had